141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we look back on the final set of pre-split fixtures. It's As You Were in the title race, with the top three all winning on the same weekend for only the second time this season. Hearts come from behind, Rangers really come from behind, and Celtic not at their best but get the job done. And there wasn't much change elsewhere. Aberdeen, are they probably safe? And if Livingston have been down for a while, are they definitely down now? I'm Gordon Duncan, and joining me tonight you have Andy Halliday and Roger Hannah.
This thrilling three-way title fight rumbles on to the post-split fixtures, Gordon, and we found out at the weekend it's all about what you do in the box. Celtic had the ox in the box to beat St Mirren. Rangers found a fox in the box to get two of them to flow a Falkirk. Hearts had crocs in the box. Landry Cabori getting booted in the back of the head for a penalty that you two boys might not agree with. So tonight, Andy, we need to be the shock jocks in the box.
Well, it was our favourite start of the season last weekend. That it was the 10th of January. It was the only sole weekend that Hearts, Celtic and Rangers have all won. And after Hearts and Celtic get the job done on Saturday, we all knew it was going to happen. Rangers were going to go and drop points on the Sunday, and that looked for all the world that that was going to happen after 40 minutes. But an incredible second half comeback, an incredible game. No twists this weekend, feels a wee bit weird, but 5 weeks to go and I'm sure there'll be more.
0141 951 1025. We're getting closer. Just five post-split fixtures to go. So what does it look like now? It's not that we don't like the Scottish Cup semi-finals, of course we do, but it's almost a shame to have the Premiership go on the back burner for an extra week. So give us your thoughts on how it looks heading into the split. As the guys have alluded to, they all won, but nothing's ever truly the same because we're a week closer to the end of the season. Rangers scoring all those goals, winning in the most convincing fashion of the three, but you wouldn't have said that at half time. So where does that leave them? Hearts, yet again, set pieces, doing the job, the home record, where does it leave them? Still top, I hear you Jambos fans say. And as for you Celtic fans, again, it's a win and it keeps you in there, but I'm sure the performance had room for improvement, shall we say. So where does it sit now? Who's the happiest? What did you take away from the weekend? Who's got the momentum? Who's got the most belief? All that sort of stuff. The same kind of questions we've been asking all season, but because they deserve to be asked. So 0141 951 1025. If there is anything else from down the league that tickled your fancy, please do share it. It's a Monday night. That can mean refereeing decisions, it can mean good goals, bad moments, whatever. You tell us. 0141 951 1025. These two will whet your appetite suitably with, first of all, your result of the weekend, please.
I'm going to go for Aberdeen. I've gave them plenty of howlers over the season on a Monday, but no, it's only their second win in the last 17 games. It was a game at the weekend that I didn't fancy them, must be said, going into it. And regardless of playing against 10 men, I thought it was as good an Aberdeen performance as they've had for a long period of time. 2-0 comfortable winners, my result of the weekend.
Safe? All that stuff?
No, not for me.
Still not?
Yeah, not for me. No, I don't.
Ooh.
Still don't think they're a great side.
That's not asked.
I don't think they're safe.
Okay, Roger Hannah, result of the weekend?
I think we have to have a nod to Rangers. If you can go to Falkirk, first league win there since 2009. As you know, Gordon, I had a family Sunday lunch arrangement yesterday. I went into the restaurant, Falkirk were leading 2-0. Mrs. Hannah made me hide my phone, and I came back out and somebody said Rangers had won 6-3, and I thought I'd maybe not been given the soda and lime that I was thinking, but fair play to them. I saw it later on in the day and they turned it around magnificently.
Goal of the weekend for not the first time in a while, but sometimes you're limited. I think you had a lot of good choices, so I'm very fascinated to see what's been omitted and what you've gone for.
Well, it wouldn't take a rocket scientist to predict my goal on the weekend, because if you're going for team goals, there's not been many better team goals this season for me than Manny Longhello's at the weekend against Hearts. It was a terrific goal. Build up for the goalkeeper, works out to the right hand side. Ibrahim Said with a lovely bit of skill in the middle, gets played out the right hand side. What about Lucas Fadinga's dummy as well?
You took the words right. I was just about to ask you.
Unbelievable. Sure. Dummy to allow Manny Longhello to tap in at the back post.
He does like a team goal. What are you going for?
Listen, there's a few contenders. I'm actually going to go for Finn Yates of Falkirk.
The goal, nice put finish.
Falkirk 2-0 up. A player has come on leaps and bounds under John McGlynn this season. And at that stage, before I had started my lunch, you would have thought that goal might have been enough for Falkirk. How wrong we were.
Your howler of the weekend then. Let's see what you've come up with. Roger Hannah, you go first.
Poor old Grant Hanley. He's been in this movie before, I think at your place, mm-hmm, earlier in the season. A midweek game, am I right, Andy?
Yes.
An early red card, a dogzo red card, a costly red card, because I think Hibs lost that night as well. Left them short-handed at Pittodrie. He conceded a penalty that gave Kevin Nisbet his first goal. And he's had a lot of highs, but he's experiencing a few lows this season as well, and he'll now miss the Edinburgh derby.
Well, I'm going to go to Tynecastle. Roger mentioned the incident. Would you call it Crocs in the Box? So I'm going to go to Crocs in the Box with Kibori's incident with Stephen Welsh. I must admit, I never actually knew the rule about, what is that, a dangerous play for the attacker if he had the ball in the box. But that's no excuse that I think the referee should know the rule if I don't. So for that instance, I don't think that should be a penalty kick.
I'm not going to use that phrase again. I was just happy I got away with it once.
It was when you said booted in the back of the head, I thought, that's a tabloid, man, that, eh? Jeez, not like a wee bit of exaggeration on a Monday night.
Booted in the back of the head.
Emphasis.
Booted.
Emphasis.
Jeez, oh. What do you think? Is Andy onto something? Was it a penalty? Answer carefully.
It falls into the category of you can see why it was given. I'm not going to blast Matthew McDermott at all for not seeing it. I was there. I didn't see it. I actually thought Landry and Gwemmel, he was kind of backing into Stephen
Kibori.
Kibori, Landry and Gwemmel.
Take dear, me back.
Landry Kibori, when he was backing into him, had just sort of fallen over and was exaggerating what was going on. I think Lauren Shanklin was about the only person of 20,000 inside that ground who was claiming for a penalty kick when it happened. I was really surprised when you saw, you know, in that scoreboard on the far side saying it was a VAR check for a penalty. No idea what was happening. You see it again. Derek McInnes used the phrase, he was kicked in the head, and you usually get a penalty if you get kicked in the head. And I can see where he's coming from, but...
See, when you say usually, you ever seen many incidents like that?
No, no.
So what do you mean usually?
Derek McInnes said that, not me. I'm just quoting the man, quoting the manager of Hearts. I can see why Motherwell-minded people like yourselves might be irate at it, because you're quoting a rule
that perhaps
it could have gone against Kibori. You could also make an argument that is it a clear and obvious error by the referee, and then we're back to this re-refereeing things. Personally, Bill it yourself, I can't wait for Willie and to hear what he's got to say in the VAR review show in this one, because this will be a belter, simply because it's so unusual.
Willie worth waiting for, some people might say. Where does that leave us? Your top man, top performer of the weekend.
I'm going to go to Nicholas Raskin. In the first half, I wouldn't know how to describe his performance, but the second half he played like a Belgian internationalist, and I thought his energy, his enthusiasm, his willingness to drive Rangers forward, I thought really turned the game on its head. And the contrast of Rangers 45 minutes in the first half compared to the 45 minutes in the second half wasn't too dissimilar to Nico Raskin's individual performance, but given how good I thought he was in the second half, he's my performer of the weekend.
Did we get your howler there actually?
Yeah, Grant Hanley.
Oh, so you did. I just got distracted.
We'll go back to the other man who benefited from that, Kevin Nisbet.
So he's your top performer?
Yeah, two goals. Big day for Aberdeen. And I've got a text message that Andy will verify here. Mrs. Hannah saying, I did not meet you. Hide your phone.
It was hidden under that big Yorkshire pudding you had that you showed me a picture of. 01419511025 is the number. Where does this leave the title race now? Post-split fixtures, that's all we've got left. Five to go. Hearts still top. Rangers still tucked in behind. Celtic still tucked in behind that. So how do you feel? Let's go with Thomas, who's going to give us the Celtic perspective first by the looks of it. Thomas, where does it sit now?
Where it sits now, first of all, evening, Gordon, Roger, Andy, hope you're all well.
Hi, Thomas. Thomas.
Where it sits now, I think, is very strange from a Celtic point of view, because we won the game, albeit the two other teams won the game, so really there shouldn't be an awful lot of change, and if there was going to be change, perhaps we've won another game. It's a positive, and it is a positive, but performance level-wise, the Celtic performance was just another tepid display, lacking in invention, lacking in ingenuity, lacking in creativity, and just about scraping by, as we've been doing for the majority of the season. I was on last week talking about how I thought bringing back the Green Brigade might be a catalyst. It maybe was for the opening 5-10 minutes, but after the buzz settled down, I think Celtic settled down into their usual pattern of more or less refusing to go forward and very little in the way of a style of play. And so whilst it's still in Celtic's hands, give or take, obviously if we win the five remaining games, I think we would then be in a situation of, it would depend on goal difference with Hearts, but so more or less it's in our hands. But I see very little in the performance that makes me think that we're going to get anywhere near winning all five games, to be honest with you. So that's where I'm sitting.
I think Thomas sums that up so brilliantly in terms of almost speaking on behalf of everyone, where, and this is why I'm looking forward to between now and 8 o'clock, is how do you feel? What do you take away from the weekend, where nothing's changed, but something always changes? You know, Hearts are a step closer ultimately. So even if the points gap hasn't changed, Hearts are a step closer. If you're a Celtic fan, you would be more than entitled to say, we're winning games, we're getting the job done. By the same token, you can hear Thomas saying, that's not, these are not title winning performances. Rangers then, as a result of that, might feel the best about themselves because they've gone away to a hard place and scored six times. But my word, that first half. So like, it's almost like we've still got more questions than answers, it feels like at times.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, I've been on the Hearts team for a long time, and the guy sitting to my left is still refusing to give his opinion. Yeah. But you know what? I wish I followed his book, because I've actually got to the point where I actually just don't know. I just don't know, because I watched Hearts first of hand. I watched Rangers back, the Rangers game on the Sunday, and I've seen the majority of the Celtic game, and it's very, very difficult to say not a lot of certainty, but a lot of confidence that one out of the three are going to go and win. And I think you can actually make a case for all three. Hearts you can obviously make a case for because they're top of the league. I think they've got two very good strikers. For me, I think Rangers are on the best form out of three, and I think Celtic, you look at the fixtures and you think they're quite favourable for them, because the top two, they're obviously playing at home. But it's what's made this season so brilliant. I don't think all three teams at the top, I don't think they're fantastic teams, and I think in any given day in game, regardless of opponent, you wouldn't surprise you if they drop points, which just does make it that exciting. In terms of Celtic, you know, you touched on it really well, Thomas. I think a lot of chat throughout the course of the season has been that front three for Celtic, which I do think has been a worry. I think they need reinforcements there. But when I'm watching Celtic, I just don't think they control the midfield the way they used to. I think in possession, I don't think they look as fluid. I don't think they play with as much tempo as they did. And then out of possession, I don't think they have enough energy and can get close to teams the way they used to either. And you watch the St Mirren side that have played, what, four games under Craig McLeish, look really, really comfortable on the ball, being able to play through the thirds against Celtic. That being said, I thought Celtic defended their box very well and restricted St Mirren to very little. But in terms of what that means for the title race, I'm going to back Roger for once. I just don't know.
Thomas, specifically about Celtic first, if you can, Roger, because you can hear Thomas is almost, don't want to put words in his mouth, but worried at the performance levels, ultimately. Well, is that fair? Is it something you would share?
Yes, it is fair. Listen, it's deja vu. We've all got Hearts supporting pals, Rangers supporting pals, Celtic supporting pals. I was speaking to a Celtic supporting pal this morning, and almost word for word, what Thomas has just said in our first call tonight, not happy with the energy. Martin O'Neill wasn't happy with the energy. He mentioned it after the game, Gordon, at the weekend. Andy talks about the midfield. It would be a worry for me what Martin O'Neill was saying about Callum McGregor, because he's had this calf injury. He was a doubt. We didn't realise he was a doubt until Martin spoke about it after the game, and he lasted about 70 minutes. These five games after the split come quite quickly, particularly the last three in the space of 6 or 7 days. Is Callum McGregor fit to get through that? You would doubt whether Alec Oxlade-Chamberlain's fit to get through a schedule like that. Celtic need Engels back. They need more from Hatate. I'm not sure whether you'll get more from Hatate. Nygren, who has been an enigma, 20 goals and, you know, a lot of complaints about what else he provides. So, you know, everybody's right. What I would say, Thomas, to cheer you up is, I was at Tynecastle on Saturday with these two gentlemen. We all got the same minutes in the pitch. and for a long, long time, Hearts were second best. They were 1-0 down to that fantastic Longuello goal. And after Braga equalised, Motherwell missed three gilt-edged chances. None better than the one from Mastronese that he scraped past the post. And when I was assessing my text and WhatsApps last night, when I realised Rangers had won 6-3.
What's a WhatsApp?
I don't know. Rangers of the 160. There was one delivered from a Rangers supporting pal, which must have been at 2-0 to Falkirk, that just said, heartless and leaderless. And I thought, they've won 6-3.
We'll get to that game, I'm sure. Thomas, does any of that cheer you up? If there are cracks for them all, are Celtic's cracks any bigger than the rest, that you don't sound too confident that this ends in winning the league?
No, I have to say I'm not too confident, and I can't believe I'm saying this as a Celtic fan. I agree 100% with Andy Halliday. It's the issue is not just the front three and the lack of goals. I mean, put it this way, in terms of Celtic out and out attackers, Rangers scored 6 goals at the weekend. The top scoring attacker for Celtic is Maida, and Yang both have 7. That's only one more than Rangers managed in more or less 50 minutes at the weekend. So it's not just that, it's the lack of control that we're having in games. It's what we're not. When was the last time Celtic dominated a football match? And yes, I get Roger's point about Hearts not perhaps being, you know, at their sparkling best, and Rangers were 2-0 down to Falkirk, and, you know, fair play to them to come back and get the win in convincing style. But I have to say, I just think when it comes down to it, if we're all basically as bad as each other, then the circumstance that we find ourselves in is we're all as bad as each other, and yet Celtic are third. So we need to be, and we need to be better enough to make it up on Rangers, and then better enough to make it up on Hearts. And I just don't know if we've got enough to make that up unless they completely capitulate. But equally, I've no real belief that Celtic won't equally completely capitulate. So much like Roger and Andy have said, I don't know. But I would, if I'm trying to look at it neutrally, which is hard in this city, as you guys know, I would have to sadly make Celtic third favourites for the title.
Thank you very much to Thomas. What about Brian, who's also a Celtic fan? Are you as pessimistic, Brian, or are you got a sunnier disposition?
No, absolutely not. Everyone has their opinion, and I respect that to a point. But at the same time, come on, 5 games to go. 5 games to go, 3 points, 3 teams. No one can predict it at all. Because Celtic, yes, everyone's saying, oh, aye, they've no got a goal scorer, they've no got this, they've no got that. But it comes across the team. And until the weekend, there was only about 2 or 3 goals in between the goal difference head-to-head, and there's 5 games. The split only started after the weekend. My point is, everybody, take a breath, and Celtic fans in particular, which I am, obviously, as you know, cool for school. Everyone will be all right. Just let's see what happens.
I love that opening line from Brian, that he respects people's opinions up to a point. I've got a line that will not give respect beyond. Brian says, you know, the 3 teams in it is only 5 games to go, which is true. The 3 teams are in it, but to quote Thomas, the previous caller, Celtic are third out of those teams. So at some point, they need to show signs of outperforming the other two. Now, again, Brian's right, Andy alluded to it. That might be the case. It might be these home fixtures after the split is what sparks that. But I think you also understand where Thomas is coming from. Brian's mentioning goal difference. Celtic are now 11 worse off than Rangers with 5 games. So I don't think that feels quite hard to make up in 5 matches, does it not?
11? Yeah, certainly the way Celtic are scoring or not scoring lots of goals at the minute. I'm not sure if you listen to the show regularly, Brian, but this is no place for calm minds and perspective. That's not what we do on Super Scoreboard. You know, Hearts are 3 clear of Celtic. Rangers are 2 clear of Celtic. Celtic got a home game fewer than Hearts and Rangers. That's true. Maybe, you know, all the difference is. The 3 of them are all imperfect. You've seen that. There were moments at Falkirk yesterday. For the first 40 minutes, Rangers certainly looked it. Celtic have been criticised for not being more energetic and effervescent against St Mirren at the weekend. We were at Tynecastle. At 1-0 down, Hearts were wobbling. When Tawanda Maswanisi ran away from Craig Halkett and Ocean McEntee, it looked as if they were going to wobble again. So they've all had difficult weekends. This weekend, they've all got away with it for only the second time this season. As you said at the top of the show, Gordon, there'll be loads of twists and turns to come. And you're right, Brian. Everybody's still in it.
To back up your point, loads of twists and turns to come. You look at the know, the table as it stands. Hearts in first, Rangers in second, Celtic in third. Our Hearts have been top of the table for how many weeks now? Is it 27, 28 weeks? I think even that, the positions in the table, I think they'll interchange every week from now to the end. I really do. I just can't see it staying all three in that position from now to the end. I can see Hearts potentially dropping points at Easter Road, and I just think it's going to be changing every single week, which is why I give up. I'm not predicting anymore because I just don't know. I can't. No, like I says, I've got one close eye on Hearts at the weekend to see how they're going to perform, what they're going to look at for the last five games of the season. And I think everyone that was there, Roger, you were obviously there, it was a game Hearts could have clearly have lost. Rangers could have clearly have lost at the weekend after the first half performance. Celtic fans are phoning in the first two callers, Thomas and Brian, not happy with their performance levels. I just can't, I don't think you can say with any confidence anymore who's going to win it.
To emphasise your point as well, the first three match days after the split, they all play at different times.
Yeah. Brian, what gives you the confidence then you can outperform these two over the next five games?
No, I was just suggesting that possibly because the split actually only happened after this weekend, that it's game on. I'm not predicting Celtic's going to win it. I would like them to win it as a Celtic fan, but as everyone's alluded to, performance-wise, not been very good this season. But does that mean then, if Celtic aren't that good this season, that Rangers or Hearts are better than Celtic because Celtic underperformed? I'm being flippant a wee bit. I'm just saying, well, do you know what? Well, if Celtic are rubbish, they've not been playing well, does that say much for Hearts or Rangers?
I think Celtic are held to a different expectation than certainly Hearts. Yeah. And you could probably lump Rangers to an extent because they don't win a lot of titles at the moment either, but you bring in the budget. But if Hearts go and win this title, I don't think anybody is going to care and say it's because Celtic weren't very good. It doesn't come into it for Hearts.
No.
There's no way. In fact, that probably doesn't come into it for Rangers, but certainly not. Certainly not Hearts.
Listen, everybody starts with 0 points and zero games. And once you've played 38, the team with the most points, or maybe the most points and the most goals, wins the league, and they deserve it, Gordon.
That was Celtic Park. What about the Falkirk Stadium? Quite a simple way of breaking it down, Rangers fans, if you need assistance. How bad was that first half, and then how good was the second, and where does it leave you, Hearts fans? What about Tynecastle on Saturday? Let's keep it going. We'll speak to you next.
Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde 1 Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here assessing another brilliant weekend in the title race, one where nothing technically changed, but again, we're one step closer to the end of the season. So does that boost Hearts? Are Rangers the ones that are looking the best because they score the most goals, or is it a worry about their first half performance? Celtic win, keep a clean sheet, and yet still Celtic fans looking for more from the performances.
You say nothing has changed. Has Hugh Keevan's percentages changed?
Well, the thing is, he'll just say that it hasn't, even if it has, so you never really know, do you? We'll find out, I'm sure, as the week progresses. Let's bring in Lewis, who's on the line. How are you, Lewis?
Yeah, I'm fine, mate. I'm fine. How are you?
Good. What did you take away from one of the most mental games of the season at Falkirk yesterday?
It was mental, mate. Obviously, it was mental. 2-0 down 26 minutes, but what a great turnaround.
I mean, Andy, if only there was a football cliche that described how a game can be different in the first 45 minutes versus the second 45 minutes. I'm sure we'll come up with something, but the
goals.
Genuinely, imagine saying, what minute did Chukwuane score in?
42.
40. No.
Imagine in the 41st minute saying to somebody, Rangers will score 6 here. It was incredible. One of the highest scoring games in Premiership history. Begin to work your way through it for us if you can.
So difficult because, like he says, in the opening 40 minutes, I thought Rangers were second best all over the pitch. I thought Falkirk were really resolute out of possession. I thought in possession, I thought they attacked quickly in transitions. I thought they looked very, very dangerous in the counter attack. And any time they made Rangers defend in their box, I just didn't think Rangers looked comfortable at all. But you said, what could change, and it's goals. I think goals, that goal for Chukwuane, I think just completely changed the game for Rangers, because I even thought for Chukwuane's goal going in the 42nd minute, as Roger says, they then have two other chances just before half time. Nasser Djiga should do better with a free header, and you just felt as if it got Rangers a wee bit of momentum. Now, it's complete hindsight, I get that, but if Chukwuane's goal doesn't go in before half time, and Rangers go in 2-0 down, I'm not sure that you've seen enough in the first half to predict that they're going to come back and win that game.
It was a ball out of play.
Sorry?
Was the ball out of play?
Well, I was talking to Gordon about this before the show. It was one of the ones when it happened at the time where you thought that could have went out just because of how high it was. You've seen the way the Falkirk players reacted straight away with their arms up. But I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever that the officials and VAR have came to the right conclusion, because there's no way whatsoever you can tell conclusively for any of the angles that the ball's went out the pitch.
It's one of those I don't even have. Like, see, if you forced me and said, tell me, do you think it was in or out? I have absolutely no.
We just look at it in camera angles, and the camera angles weren't conclusive. The ball kind of disappears away, but I don't know.
I don't even have a suspicion that I'm looking to have backed up either way. Do you see what I mean? I have absolutely no idea. Yeah, do you care? Do you lean either way on whether you think it was in or out? I just can't tell.
I have genuinely no idea. I think you need to put your faith, as Andy says, in the linesman.
I think John McGlynn handles that great. He says under 10s you're told to play to the whistle. So Lewis, do you take is that a positive? No, of course it's a positive. But you know what I mean? Is that the type of result that tells you Rangers can win this league because they're scoring six goals?
That's not going to decide if Rangers are going to win the league. It's great. That's great. That's happened. We've scored six goals. We've came for 2-0 behind. You take that one game at a time. You go to Motherwell. You go in. You try your best against Motherwell. You need to win against Motherwell. You beat Motherwell, then you take the next game, one game at a time. That's how you need to take it, Rangers. From where we were, how many were we behind Hearts? We 13 or 16 or something behind at one point. We've been beat off them twice this season. Now look at it, 1 point behind.
I've loved nearly everything about this season, apart from the fact it's caused even fans to start saying take one game at a time. I get annoyed when managers do it and now fans have started, but I do understand.
Lewis, can you imagine last day of the season, Rangers need to go to Falkirk, a win, and Rangers are champions. They go 2-0 down after 41 minutes and they win 6-3. Can you imagine the theories coming out that day?
Could you imagine if the ball went, did the ball go out halfway, did the ball not go out halfway? If that happened, then imagine it then.
I'm taking a year off if there's a debate about the ball going in or out of play that night. What do you think, Roger, in terms of conclusions? You can clearly say that Rangers were really, like, worryingly bad, you would say, in the first half. But then look at the turnaround, and it's not just the fact that you can say, okay, bad first half, good second half, won the game. He scored six times at Falkirk. This is one of the success stories. Everybody's talking about how good Falkirk are. Yeah.
And four at home to Dundee United, four at home to Aberdeen.
I suppose
to that.
Maybe what I'm getting at is, does the good in the first half far and away sort of outweigh the bad in the first, or do you see the...
Well, it does by a score of 63, yes.
I mean, in terms of mood and feeling.
I know what you mean. In terms of levels of optimism, the Hearts fans will probably ignore the fact that we're 1-0 down and ignore Mas Venisi's miss. Rangers fans will probably ignore that first 40 minutes, and Celtic fans like Brian, who was on earlier, will choose to ignore the fact that they weren't at their best. Because at this stage of the season, whether we like the sound bites or not, it is one game at a time, because one game can finish you off in this title race if you get it wrong.
That's what I'm saying, though, Andy. Is there more good bits to like than there were bad bits to not like when you win 6-3? You know, say Rangers had played that way in the first half and then won 3-2 and sort of stumbled their way through the second half. It's maybe more in the balance, but do you need to take a step back and say going to Falkirk and scoring six times is really impressive, even if you do perform badly?
Yeah, I think there's way more positives than negatives. I think we've spoken about Celtic so much recently about their powers of recovery when they've losing games at half time, and I think Rangers were really up against it when they were 2-0 down, not just obviously in the scoreline, but like he says, the result. And I think Danny Rose mentioned that a few times. How many times, Gordon, over the last 2-3 months have these players been labelled about their mentality? So you could already hear the calls that were going to get phoned in on Monday. It's a title challenge. The man just keeps talking about cup finals and look at the performance they deliver. And they managed to turn that round completely and score five goals in the second half against an absolutely excellent John McGlynn Falkirk side. So I certainly think for me there was more positives to take.
Thank you, Lewis. What about Ian? Are you feeling positive like Lewis and Andy are, Ian, or seeing something else?
I, to be honest with you, I'm more annoyed than positive. Just, I was positive when Rangers obviously went on and won 6-3. I was really gutted when we were down 2-0, but it's the attitude that really worries me. I mean, I know you hate people saying one game at a time, and I'm the same, I think. Danny Rowe should be going out and saying, look, you've got five games to go. Get out and win the five games. Don't take... Get out for the minute you cross that line and try and take what's yours. That's the way that they should be approaching it. But that first half performance, that was lazy. It was inept, and it showed you that in the second half. Rangers, on paper, will probably get the better team at the top three, but that's not going to guarantee you anything if you do not go out with the right attitude. And I thought their attitude was absolutely terrible, and that's what worries me about it.
Yeah, it was interesting because I don't know if it was almost a game plan by Danny Rowe. It was just a kind of lack of intensity for the players, but I agree with you. I thought they looked really, really lacklustre in the opening 40 minutes of the game. And then the contrast in the second half for me was nothing. To me, it didn't seem like much tactical. Yes, they played with an extra striker, but I thought it was more about the basics. I thought they ran harder and they tackled more. And you even look at the goals that Rangers score. You know, it's Nico Raskin winning duels in the middle of the pitch and busting up the pitch. It's Kisama fighting for a lost cause and winning the ball off Keelan Adams. There was no real great football, no loads of build-up play. I just thought they'd done the basics really well. And in the first half, like you says, never laid a glove on Falkirk, didn't win first balls, didn't win second balls, didn't run in behind, didn't press Falkirk. So where I just thought, to put it mildly, I just felt like they took the handbrake off in the second half and they played with a lot more purpose and intensity. And what I will say with Rangers over the last few weeks, we spoke so much about Rangers' lack of creativity in the final third. And see, since they've went to the two strikers and then over the last 2 months or so, I just think they've made teams defend so much more. And by making Falkirk defend in the second half, they then score five goals in the second half. And I mean, it's remarkable. 14 goals in the last three games for a side that for a long period of time you thought lacked a goal scorer and lacked creativity at the final third.
See, to now provide a bit of balance, Roger, because the previous question I think I asked was about how, you know, 6-3 is a sizeable margin and does that blow away a lot of the negativity? But when you hear Ian outline it, the goal that we're talking about before half time is so crucial.
Of course,
you know,
is,
so there is
John McLean said, isn't it?
So although it's a convincing outcome, there is a conceivable world there where Falkirk don't switch off and they clear and it goes 2-0, and I don't think Rangers do win that 6-3.
No.
So are there legitimate concerns there for Ian? He's putting it down to sort of attitude. Why don't you start a game like that if you're capable of finishing it the way you do?
And listen, it's not a one-off yesterday, you know, and even the United game 8 days earlier, you know, there were moments.
United hit the post, didn't they, before when Rangers went up?
It could have gone 3-3 before Mujovski made it 4-2. The 4-2 against Hearts, they were behind twice, Gordon, early in the game at home to Hearts as well. So what happened yesterday, Falkirk, is not a one-off. To Rangers' great credit, in moments like this, they have managed to flick the switch and motor away from teams by scoring goals. It's the old one, you know, a few weeks ago when Celtic went through that run of scoring last minute winners, you know, people would say, oh, I mean, that will not go on forever. You do wonder if it will go on forever, you know, Rangers losing 2 and 3 goals in a game but still winning the game. You know, it's a big ask for Chermiti and co to have to score 3 or 4 goals minimum every week just to get 3 points.
Thank you very much to Ian. Let me tell you about this before we move on. Clyde 1. Talking serious money here. Herb was our latest winner on Friday. Won £760,000. It's so easy to get in that draw, and you can start thinking right now about how to spend that £770,000. It's gone up again. So text YES to 61025. Text R250 plus your standard network rate. You can also enter at makemeawinner.co.uk, where you will find all the rules for this network competition. Or if you'd prefer, call 03434 269340, and the calls are charged at the standard network rate. It is over 18s only and lines close 5 p.m. Friday. It is a serious amount of money. £770,000. Text YES to 61025. Good luck.
Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hanna and Andy Halliday are here. It's getting close. 5 post-split games to go. Scottish Cup semi-finals in between. So we're all strapped in for an exciting conclusion to the season. Let's keep going with John, who is a Celtic fan. What are you thinking, John?
Hi, guys. First-time caller, thanks.
Hey, John.
So,
John, I love this. You've just waited all these years until the most exciting title race of all time hits the last home straight, and then you decide to pick up the phone. What a moment! What impact is it leaving on you that made you phone?
It's looking at the game at the weekend, being at the game at the weekend, and well, the season as a whole, and all these questions coming out, who can beat who, and all of that. I think Celtic can beat Hearts or Rangers on their day, and equally they can beat us. What I think could be the shift for us in these last five games, or the downfall, is coming back for a bit of adversity. I think we've seen it all season that when Celtic go behind, that, you know, never stop mentality, we always get there. Whether we're capable or not, the facts are just there that we're not doing it. And squandered chances as well. I think goal difference is going to have its part. So I don't think it's about mentality for Celtic. I don't think it's about individual ability. I think it's just the facts have shown us this season. If we go down, because we're struggling to get there, you know, when we're not down, we struggled at the weekend as we have a lot of the season. But if we go down behind any one of these teams in the top six, we'll struggle to turn it around. And you compare that to Hearts, who have got the form at the minute, who seem to be able to trudge it through, and then what Rangers done yesterday, I think that could be the difference over what might or might not happen in an Old Firm or the game against Hearts. And also the goal difference, that's the last point I was going to make. The goal difference is going to play a massive part, I think.
Yeah, there've been a couple of moments, spoke about Celtic going behind at Kilmarnock and showed a good bit that day. But is John on to, do you see where John's coming from overall? Is there that sort of resilience, is there that fear that teams used to have, knowing that even if, you know, you can never rule Celtic out? Because some Celtic fans will say, yeah, that is still there. I'm not loading the question, but John's feeling that kind of just not evident.
I don't think it'll be evident beyond the split, because the five teams that Celtic will play beyond the split won't really fear. You know, Rangers have gone there and won this season. Hearts have gone there and won this season. Hibs have gone there and won this season. Motherwell have beaten Celtic at Fir Park, so I don't think, you know, knowing the teams, having seen the teams, knowing the managers, I don't think they'll be terrified to play Celtic after the split. But equally, I don't think anyone will be terrified to play Rangers or Hearts. You look at the teams, whoever wins the league, and I'm not ruling anyone out, I think this is the kind of end of a cycle for this Celtic team. There'll be a new manager, and there will be into the double figures of new players for next season. So you just wonder, you know, yes, they'll want to win the league. Of course they'll want to win the league. But you just wonder if there's more of a hunger at, you know, the teams who haven't done it before. Celtic, of course, in distance, I will never rule Celtic out. I think they're in with a right chance of this. But, there's a kind of different feeling attached to all three teams.
Is the goal difference a worry for Celtic fans like John? Andy Martin O'Neill was asked about it on Friday, and he said no, in the sense that he just couldn't focus on it too much. He just needed to win the games first. But we mentioned the numbers earlier. They are six behind Hearts, which sounds doable, but with five games to go, it's not
too far behind Rangers.
11 behind Rangers. Yeah. They can't make that up, can you?
No. I think in the distance between Rangers and Celtic, it is an extra point. And we've said for a few weeks now, it wouldn't surprise anyone if this does go down to goal difference at the end of the season between either of the three. And if that's the case, obviously Rangers are strong favourites with that. I don't see Celtic and catching up the goal difference at all. And I just want to pick up on something John said, Johnny's point, which I do agree with. He says that Celtic could beat anyone on their day. I don't see their day just now. I don't see, when was the last really strong 90 minute performance that Celtic put in under Martin O'Neill? I'd argue probably his first game back was at Dundee United at home. I think they won the game 4-0. They were extremely comfortable. Out with that, I don't think there's been a really strong performance that I can remember. I think there's been 45 minutes in there. Yeah. I thought 45 minutes in the first half at Dundee, I thought they were really strong.
45 minutes at Ibrox in the second
45 half. Minutes at Ibrox in the second half. And to be honest, I think something at the weekend, I thought the first 45 minutes without blowing us away, I thought they were quite comfortable. But I think Celtic have to put a really strong run of performances together from now to the end of the season. Now, I said at the top of the show, John, and I back up, I think the big case you can make for Celtic winning this league is the fact that the two big fixtures, obviously, with the teams above them, Hearts and Rangers, they've got at home. Now, that being said, Rangers have beaten them at Celtic Park and Hearts have beaten them at Celtic Park.
John, you mentioned you don't think it's like personnel, but are these things not all really linked and one leads to the other? Because if you're talking about goals, and I know it can be spread throughout a team, but there is an issue there at number nine. There's an uncertainty, there's a there's not as much creativity as there used to be. Even then, as go back deep, you know, you don't have the Rio Hatate you used to have. Rogers talking about question marks over Callum McGregor's fitness. So is it linked? Is there a personnel thing that leads to this other stuff that you think's missing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at Maida, and that's well laboured this season, where he is compared to last season, all the reasons for that and whatnot. He's still putting a shift in, but he's kind of Maida's touch that was there last season. Anything he got his foot on was going in. That's just not happening. There's a number of teams we could have beat if we'd taken those early chances and beat them handsomely, but the facts are we didn't. There's no doubt there's players coming to the end of their cycle, there's players not performing, the reinforcements we've brought in are not hitting their stride. There's any number of reasons you could throw at it, but I think the squad is lacking now. We've not got that momentum. Negativity is much harder to come out of than to fall for positivity if you're reinforcing it every week, and that's just where I think that squad and that team is at the minute. I'll never question the mentality to go out and win for Celtic every week, but when you've not got that momentum versus what maybe the other two teams have got, and when it's time to go to the trenches, you've not got that resource or that creativity there that can give you that wee bit of difference in a game. I think that becomes harder. And that, for me, as you touched on, the other two teams are not great either, and they can have an off day as much as we can. But I think if we go down, the heads go down very quickly, and then the crowd gets on the back. And even at the weekend, where, you know, our possession's better again, our shots on goal are better again, we're still only 1-0 away from that game, you know. So I think that's what I see for this Celtic side over the past 20 years and more, you know.
Yeah.
For the running.
John, you're a good man. Thank you very much for calling for the first time. That was John from Perth. What about another John from Clydebank, but he's in Santa Ponsa of all places. John, take it away.
Good evening, guys. Just a couple of wee points. One I'd like to make yesterday, I sat and watched the game, and I phoned one of my friends who was at the game, and he pointed out that, I know we're down 2-0 by half time, but the wind was absolutely horrendous. He said, you'd no idea, the telly gave it no justice. He said it was an uphill battle for the first half against the wind, and then you see the big difference in the second half. Obviously they changed the formation, mm-hmm. but the wind was at their back. Whether that, I'm not a football player, I mean, your man I was able to answer that question. Sorry, Alan, but whether it makes a difference or not, I don't know.
Alan, it is wind's brutal to play in.
I don't know what's worse, being called Alan, and then when you correct yourself, you call me Alan again.
I need to have to drink.
Oh, quite right, John. Go and enjoy yourself.
It is hard, isn't it? Like, but I wondered that for a second, because the old kind of, oh, we've got the wind this half. I'm assuming there was maybe something a bit more tactical to it, but I don't know. Is that why? Is it any contributory factor to the difference in both sides and both halves?
Listen, I think it plays its part 100%, but I think Rangers, like I said, intensity, I think, was the biggest difference between the first half and the second half. But to be fair, my dad actually said that to me earlier on, that the telly didn't quite pick up how strong the wind was and how much it played its part. And no, if you look at the face value, it's 7 goals we scored at one end of the pitch.
John, what else are you thinking tonight?
Oh, Andy's dad was at the Rangers end.
I think it's a safe assumption, John, I must admit.
Right. The other point was, if Rangers do win the league, do we need to give Russell Martin a medal? Not to get the manager gets a league medal. We'd be happy. And the same would go for Celtic if it's the other way about. Do you have to give him it?
I think it's 10 anyway, is it not?
Is that for players?
The manager gets a league medal as well.
Celtic win it, Martin O'Neill would need to get 2.
No.
Rogers would need to get one. Nancy would need to get one.
You invite Russell Martin back, maybe bring him out onto the pitch the last day of the season, give him his medal, John.
You don't know how valuable that point of first part was in the first game of the season.
You only get out if he wears the brogues and the suit.
This reminds me, actually, it's getting to a proper mad stage of the season. Remember someone called last week to say, if Hearts win, will they get the team of the year at the BBC Sports Personality of the Year Awards? Now we're worried about whether previous managers will get a winner's medal.
This is brilliant.
Do you got to answer? You can answer, John. He's asked the question. Does Russell Martin get a medal? Tell him. His holiday's going to be ruined if you don't answer.
I don't think Russell Martin will get a medal. And by the way, John, it's an easy mix-up. I think Andy does look a wee bit like an Allen. The one for 2 doors down.
Thanks for clearing that up, John. Enjoy your holiday. Let's play this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun. For the best football news and opinion online.
thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
I don't know if he'll be claiming it, will he? I don't think he'll be phoning the sixth floor at Hampden to say it's Russell.
Seems to be in the frame to take the Bristol City job in the summer, I see today.
Is this off Roy Hodgson?
Yeah, Roy Hodgson to the end of the season. Good Russell on. Seems to be in the frame.
Right, let's play Beat the Pundit, the first of a new week. 01419511025. And the lines close at 7.
01419511025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here picking our way through the talking points from the weekend. As always, if you think we've missed one, if you think there's something that deserves more attention, please do tell us. We're only at the halfway point. So what about you Hearts fans? How are you feeling in the title race? Because still top, nothing's changed there, but crucially, a week closer to the end, a game closer. So how are you feeling, Motherwell fans? You played your part as well at the weekend, so thoughts there and anything else, get them in. We'll do this first.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Okay, Beat the Pundit time. It is a new week. Roger, you've not played in a few weeks now, is that right?
No, I could do a few weeks,
I thought you felt, I felt like you went on a wee run for a while. Let's see if Thomas and Alexandria can tackle one of you two. Thomas, how are you?
I'm all right, mate. How are you?
Good. First time on this?
Yes.
Good, I like it. How do you usually do it at home?
I just said to the producer that it depends on the week.
That's a perfectly reasonable answer. A stupid question really when you think about it. I was going to say I'll stop asking it, but I think it's unlikely. It depends if you know the questions ultimately. Andy Halliday, let's toss the coin. If it's the blue side, it will be Andy. If it is the red side, it will be Roger Hanna. And it's blue for Andy Halliday.
Honestly,
I thought you liked playing. What's happening here?
It's just embarrassing how little this guy plays.
I thought you liked playing.
I don't mind that, eh?
Tony Watt's the most enthusiastic.
Oh, he is.
Beat the Pundit player. Oh, really, really upset, frustrated if he doesn't.
He's good as well.
If he doesn't play, he's decent.
Good, Tony.
Another good result for the Jags at the weekend, incidentally. Yeah. He was back on the bench. Let's give Andy something else to listen to. Thomas, it's pretty simple. 30 seconds, answer as many as you can, and pass if you do not know the answer. All right?
Yeah, go
well, let's do it then. 30 seconds on the clock and your time starts now. Tomoki Iwata left Celtic for which English team?
Brighton.
How many goals were scored in the second half of Falkirk Rangers yesterday?
Six.
Who has won the most Premiership Manager of the Month awards this season?
Bennett McInnes.
Name any Welsh team who previously played in the Scottish Challenge Cup.
I have no idea.
Who was the interim Kilmarnock manager between Stuart Kettlewell and Neil McCann?
Pass.
Name either top scoring Scottish player in England's top four leagues this season. Name either top scoring Scottish player in England's top four leagues.
McTominay.
Okay, let's bring him back. Oh, Andy Halliday. don't give it away, Thomas. Do not give it away. You know what you just did, and so do I, but that's fine. Are you ready?
Yes.
30 seconds on the clock. Your time starts now. Tomoki Iwata left Celtic for which English team?
Birmingham.
How many goals were scored in the second half of Falkirk Rangers?
Six.
Who's won the most Premiership Manager of the Month awards this season?
Dennett McInnes.
Name any Welsh team who previously competed in the Scottish Challenge Cup.
The New Saints.
Who was the interim Kilmarnock manager between Stuart Kettlewell and Neil McCann?
Chris Dillon.
Name either top scoring Scottish player in England's top four leagues.
Hurst.
In what decade did St Mirren last win the Scottish Cup?
The
quick
70s.
Poor from you. And I'm going to get back to why in a second. Thomas, how do you think it went?
Not great.
Not great. That's fair enough. Straight to the point. I thought you got a couple on the board. Let's go through and remind ourselves. I also felt for you here, Thomas. I felt like you kind of could almost remember it, and the pressure of the first.
I would like to say, for the last question, I thought my head just went to top four leagues in the world.
Oh, don't worry, we'll get to that one. We'll get to that one. But the first one,
that was terrible.
On the first one, Tomoki Iwata went to Birmingham. You said Brighton. I can almost hear the it sounds similar. I can't give him it. You know, I'm trying here. I'm trying to cut Thomas some slack. Birmingham 1-0. Andy Halliday, except he starts on minus one, so it means nil-nil. How many goals scored in the second half yesterday? It was six. You both got it, so we're still level. Who's won the most Premiership Manager of the Month awards? Derek McInnes has won three. Jens Bertolasco's won two, so we're still level. Name any Welsh team who's played in the Challenge Cup. You had a few: Conas Quay, New Saints, Ballatown, and so on. Andy Halliday gets it and goes one in front. The interim Kilmarnock manager between Stuart Kettlewell and Neil McCann was Chris Doolan. Andy Halliday goes two in front. Fair play to Thomas. He's shown us what he thought. I said name either top scoring Scot in England's top four leagues. He just said the world's top four and said Scott McTominay, which was wrong. You said George Hurst?
Wrong.
Ollie McBurney or Callum Patterson?
Wow, Callum Patterson's still
scoring. Callum Patterson has got 14 league goals for MK Dons. Oh, and Ollie McBurney, similar, well, same in the Championship. So you didn't get it. I thought you were going for the 10 at one point. And 9 days ago, we did a wee live show at East Kilbride, didn't we?
I know, I just don't remember
there
it.
There was a question about St Mirren's last cup win. It was 1987. And I wowed the audience. They were amazed. They were cheering and everything when I unloaded this. What's the stat about that cup final?
Oh, you told me. Don't tell me.
See, if you don't remember this, I'm going to be seriously offended.
Don't tell me. I do remember it.
Come on.
Honestly, I thought he was hanging off my every word, Roger Hanna. So Mirren Dundee United.
Somebody with Coca-Cola or something?
No. Not
you told me a stat with that before.
1987. Roger Hanna put him out of his misery.
It was the last time the Scottish Cup final was contested purely by Scottish players.
That's right.
Oh, is
that's
it?
Right.
Is it?
Oh, no, right, that
great. Anyway, do you know what, Thomas? You did all right. You got a couple on the board, but Andy Halliday was just a bit too strong. Hard lines, Thomas. Who's your team anyway?
Celtic.
Going to win this league or not?
I don't know. It changes every week. Last week I was all right. I was quite confident, and then. Oh, I don't know, this week we're winning by one goal and Rangers are coming back for 2-0 and winning 6-3. I don't know, I genuinely don't know.
It sums up how delicate it is, because Thomas is just admitting there that he was confident last week. Celtic have won this week, and yet he's less confident than he was previously. Go figure.
That's what this title race does to people, Gordon.
Brilliant, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
Well, you mentioned about the table not changing, but something's always changing. It's a game less for Celtic to catch two teams above them, so Celtic needed to change.
Because, you know, I don't think anyone needs us to revisit what became quite a pointless debate, if you can call it that, about fixtures and the order of them. But every week that passes without the points gap changing is another week that Hearts might not even need to win at Celtic Park in the last day of the season.
Yeah,
that's so particularly
great draw for Hearts,
particularly for Celtic coming from third. They need to cut a throat somewhere, and that's the beauty of the split. You get the chance to do that, but they don't get the chance to do it to Hearts.
Yeah.
Until the final day.
I think
points will be dropped before then.
Yeah, I do, but I think that fixture's fell in quite a good place for Hearts, I must admit. What do you think the chances are that in 2 Mondays' time we sit here and all teams are on 70 points?
So that would mean
the Hearts lose at Easter Road.
Right.
Rangers and Motherwell draw.
Okay.
At Ibrox. And Celtic beat Falkirk at home.
Jeez. Who knows? I'll
a man that,
that
predicts
you.
Nothing, you think that's got a chance?
I'm just wondering about helicopters Saturday. Who's going in the chopper, DL or Keevans?
Good question. Both scared of heights, I would imagine. Hugh can't even drive a car. Can't let him in a helicopter. Anyway, thank you very much to Thomas on the line. Let's just go a bit more informal and bring in Tam, who's on the other line. It was Thomas on the previous one. What are you thinking, Tam?
How are you doing, lads? I'm just going on about the VAR, obviously. As they say, they fit their purpose, but I think they've just totally lost the plot now. I support Milo. I don't mind saying I support Milo, but I'm absolutely sick of the decisions we've been getting all the time. And I've seen a lot of other games too. That decision for that penalty Saturday, just, I just started laughing when I was watching it. I thought it was that bad. If we're going to, as Eddie's talking about the Rule 12. Rule 12 tells you if a guy headers the ball as low as that, it's dangerous play. So why did VAR not just look at that and say that's the first instance that happened, so it's dangerous play? Could you know? I just can't fathom why the VAR don't look at it. I've got the rules and all that and still get it wrong.
I don't know if it's quite as explicit as Tam's explained it, but that rule there, it actually says So it's from IFAB. It says, playing in a dangerous manner is any action that whilst trying to play the ball threatens injury to someone. That includes the player themselves. So the bit that Tam's coming at it from is, when Kabore is on the ground and he heads the ball away from Stephen Welsh, and Stephen Welsh then catches him in the back of the head, is that dangerous from Kabore? Because you, I had a bit of fun earlier on, but I mean, you are right. I've heard a very sort of simple counter argument when people say, if you get kicked in the head, it's a penalty. Well, you know, you hear a lot of that.
That was a message that the Hearts manager was advancing on Saturday night.
But Tam's talking about specifically, should it get to that, when Kabore is on the ground and he heads it, is that playing in a dangerous manner or not? What do you think?
I don't know. It is such an unusual incident. I can't remember one similar to it, really, that's led to a penalty kick. It's all in the perception of it. Matthew McDermott, like my good self, didn't see it at the time. Was it Stephen McLean that was the fourth official, I think, at the weekend, has directed him to the screen. So Stephen McLean...
Who was the VAR?
The VAR official, Stephen McLean, has directed him to the screen. So he clearly thinks there's something to look at by way of a penalty. And when Matthew sees it again, time and again, he clearly agrees. I'll be fascinated, as I always am, to hear Willie Collum's views on this, on the VAR view. I think it's been a breath of fresh air, that show, because if there is doubt, if there is error in any of it, then Willie calls it out and says it as it is. You can see why the penalty's been given. But again, like a lot of our things, is it a clear and obvious error by Matthew McDermott in the first place?
That's always that next layer, Andy. You've got that just kind of basic one, which is much easier for everybody. Is that a penalty, yes or no? Mm-hmm. And then if you want to get really sort of detailed with it and technical, you say, okay, is there a doubt about dangerous play? Maybe there isn't. Maybe Willie Collum tells us there isn't. Is there a doubt about dangerous play? Is there a doubt about, I don't know, how much force there is, whatever. So if there are those doubts, is that a clear and obvious error? Why, you know, why then does it get given after a review? I don't know.
On the law that you've read out, I don't think there's a doubt on that. So I think Kabore heading it is deemed then as dangerous play from Kabore by heading the ball. Now, to follow up with Roger, I always try and give my honest opinion regardless of being involved in the game in Motherwell or whatnot, but I actually didn't know what to make of the situation because, like Roger says,
it's unusual.
It is such an unusual incident.
I admit that myself as well.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I feel like I know the majority of football laws. I know you're certainly more of a man of the laws than I am, but that isn't a law I was familiar of, so I didn't really know what to make of the situation. But that being said, from the letter of the law that you've just read out there, for me, there's no way it can be a penalty kick, because I do think Kabore heading that ball is then deemed as dangerous play.
But at the same time, if that isn't a consideration, or it's not enough of a consideration, there's quite a clear argument where people say, if Kabore is upright and he flicks the ball away with his foot and then Stephen Welsh catches him, well, that's a penalty. Yeah. Is that something that makes sense to you, Tam?
Can I jump in there?
Of course you can.
Andy Halliday says there it's not familiar to us. Yes, it isn't familiar to the Joe Public or the fan or whatever, but surely it must be familiar to VAR. They're there to get these decisions right. Surely they must be able to look at the rule book or whatever, or know the rules beforehand to get these decisions right.
No, I get that. I don't think when people say that, Tam, I don't think they're saying that's any sort of, like, you know, it lets you away with making whatever decision you want. I'd agree with Andy. I've just not seen one like that. You know what it's like? You see a handball in the box, you've seen loads. You see somebody getting pulled back. The Dogzo ones now, we've seen loads. Yeah. We've had VAR for a few years. I don't remember one where a player is on the ground, flicks the ball with his head, gets caught in the head, and a penalty's given.
No, there was another law I wasn't familiar with, sorry, and again, even just thinking of it, it was the continuation into the box. I think a pull's a continuation, but a push isn't, that one.
Or a kick or a tackle.
Or a kick, yeah, that's one I never knew of. But like you says, Tam, listen, I gave the decision my howler of the weekend. And the reason I gave it my howler was for exactly what you says. Although we weren't aware of that rule, I'm expecting the VAR officials to be aware of it. So in that respect, I don't know how a penalty can be given. And it's funny you saying getting sick of it, because I was here last Monday, and my howler last Monday was the refusal, shall I say, of an award or a penalty on Tawanda Maswanisi against Falkirk. So
that was worse, to be fair.
Masinissi one?
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. I don't disagree.
Because we argue about everything, and I would never broad brush this because there's always going to be somebody. But I feel like most people, like as in the high 90s, would look at that Masinissi one against Falkirk and say, oh, that's a penalty. Yeah. There clearly is more debate about this one. Mm-hmm. Isn't there, Roger? There's clearly more of a split, whether yeah. it is because it's unusual. There are a few ways, I think, of looking at this one. I think it's okay to admit that.
Listen, you're absolutely correct. And you don't take our word for it. Just listen to the contrasting views of the two managers after the game. Derek thought it was a penalty because he kicked him in the head. Jens Bertolascu thought it was soft and extreme. He didn't think there was enough contact for a start. And that is even without looking into, you know, the rule book and
yeah.
how, you know, Kabori's proximity to the ground, if you like, when this foul took place. A really interesting one. It took Matthew McDermott a wee bit of time just to be convinced by it, I think. Not many people were, you know, with the exception of Lauren Shanklin, as we said earlier in the show, not many people were claiming for a Gordon. I think purely because it's something that's so rarely seen.
And I know this is the bit that really annoys Andy. The bit that I wonder if we ever actually get to a level that satisfies everyone, because it's so, it is so subjective. This, your bar will feel totally different to Andy's, to somebody else's. This notion of what's the clear and obvious error? Where is the bar for intervention? Do you want that? Do you want it to be really strict? Does it need to be something where everybody says, that's horrific, you must intervene there? Or do you want it a bit lower? I think there was talk about kind of raising it up to a certain point, but what does that, what does that really mean? Does it mean you do start overlooking things like that because there's a little grey area?
I know what you mean. It doesn't matter where you raise or lower the bar to, you'll never find a level that everyone's satisfied with. I'll take you back. It was at Nissen at the other end of the pitch. Austin Trusty and Jack Butland earlier in the season. Now, it's obviously not going to be a penalty because it's in the Rangers penalty, but it'll be a free kick. But people were arguing, should Trusty have been booked, as he was? Should Trusty have been sent off, which he wasn't?
Not sure the wisdom of bringing this one up again,
no,
right enough.
But that raged on for days. And I think
days?
That's all rage on for days as well, because people will think Motherwell were hard done to, and others will think, no, he's kicked him in the head, it's a penalty kick.
Well, he's welcome to have my number, and we can chat VAR improvements next year.
I bet he'll be.
Just tell him to phone Alan.
But that will be, because by the way, again, what I always kind of say on this as well, this is not exclusive to Scottish football. This is VAR in a nutshell, worldwide, is this notion of what is re-refereeing a game and what isn't. That's yeah. I think that's so, so hard. And I think you're seeing that. I think world football is struggling to find that spot.
And my spot is let them re-referee the game. That's what technology is for.
You want to go the other way, don't
you? Yeah. So I think literally go the opposite way and remove clear and obvious error, come to the right decision. And I think, to make it a lot easier for referees, and I do think it does make it a lot easier for them, is remove clear and obvious error. And then to go even further,
then it's like, what's the point in the referee being on the field then?
Well, again, I still think there's loads of nuances within the game that you need a referee for, but to use the benefit of the technology, I think remove clear and obvious altogether and come to what you feel is the right conclusion.
Tam, thank you, good time to call. We'll get you on next. Let's hear from you.
Tackle the headlines. 1-4-1-9-5-1-1-0-2-5. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hannes here alongside Andy Halliday. 1-4-1-9-5-1-1-0-2-5. That is the number that you need. We're about to bring in Ross and get a Hearts perspective. How are the league leaders feeling after another win at the weekend? Let me quickly set up the question for you tonight.
The full-time teaser with Arcaplan Glasgow. Planning permission and building warrants drawings for home extension, conversion or renovation.
Okay, your question is this, and it's thank you to Adam in Bridge of Weir that has sent it in. Can you name the 9 players since 2018 who've played in the Scottish Premiership aged 39 or older? That is some landmark. Can you name the 9 players since 2018 who've played in the Scottish Premiership aged 39 or older?
Craig Gordon.
Yes, just 43. What's happening with him, Roger Hanna? Are we going to get this guy back for the World Cup? He's getting pretty close.
I hope so, but with each passing week, you have to say the hope diminishes. Not in the Hearts squad again at the weekend. No inkling of him returning to the Hearts squad anytime soon. How much football would he need to play before Steve Clarke would be willing to throw him in that opening game against Haiti?
quite a situation we've got brewing there. Anyway, save that for another day. Craig Gordon, yes, quite easily. Any others?
Clint Hill?
No.
Wow, I thought it was a cert.
Trying to think of timings here. Gareth McCauley?
Yes, 39 years and 1 month when he last played. Didn't play many, did he? Was it one, in fact? Was
no,
it one appearance?
That,
was it?
Alan McGregor?
Yeah, Alan McGregor. Okay, we'll leave it there. We're looking for the nine players since 2018 who've played in the Premiership 39 or older. Alan McGregor, Gareth McCauley and Craig Gordon, which leads us on nicely to Ross, who's a Hearts fan. Ross, how does it feel to be top of the table going into the split?
Hello again. Same.
Just the same.
Still on our hands. We won the game on Saturday. Yes, it was a bit nervy. It was, and Motherwell did have chances to win, but they didn't score them, and we did. So, yeah.
Does it feel significant, though, Ross? That I know it's like just another week, but there's something about it when you know that that's the split now. You know, it's like the last sort of chapter.
Yeah.
Does it feel like you've reached an important point to still be top?
It's at the point where you don't have to. You know, performances don't really matter. You just need to win the points. That's all. At the end of the day. I understand about the penalty as well. And yeah, I've never seen it given anywhere before, so I wasn't expecting it to be given, but we got it. And maybe that's just a sign of, I don't like to say it, but because Rangers and Celtic have had it for over the years, maybe that's a sign of what just happens at the teams at the top. Maybe that's just the case, that they get away with these things. And don't get me wrong, Celtic and Rangers have got away with a lot of them over the years.
I've always said as well, look, that I can't become a hypocrite over a couple of weeks spell. I always say that every single team in the world, the fans are going to tell you that they've got a list of things that went against them in a season. And right now, Andy, you don't feel Motherwell should have had the penalty against. I think everybody feels they should have had a penalty last week. That's 2 in 2 weeks. I know you guys,
sides penalty.
Yeah, I know you guys felt you should have had a penalty at Ibrox, and you felt that a disallowed goal at Falkirk. It's easy for me to rhyme them off. Every team can do this, and I feel you almost just have to. You tie yourself in knots when you try and say that you've been more hard done by than anybody else, because every set of fans is at it. So I don't know if there's anything in Ross's theory about the teams at the top.
I think the manager answered it pretty well, though, because he talked about that being part of the uncontrollables, and the controllables for us is putting the ball in the back of net. And like he says, had three, four great chances to do so, which you miss. And if you miss the type of chances against a very good side like Hearts, you're allowing them the opportunity to go and get a winner.
How big, though, is that Masuenisi chance? It's a goal of the season contender, well, until he doesn't.
I was
score.
Just about to say that my goal of the weekend was Lingelo. There would have certainly been that one if he managed to put it in the back of the net. And it's a scenario that he's been unbelievable in all season long. You give him opportunities at that area of the pitch that he usually puts in the back of the net, but it was the design of the goal. I mean, that turn, just that first touch on the swivel to knock it by Craig Halkett, who I've played with, and Craig Halkett's no slouch, but you know, Masuenisi showed him a turn of pace to get an on goal, and then the composure to almost that little fake shot to then allow McEntee to slide in, then goals gaping for him to put it in the corner. Like I says, he's done it 17 times the league this year, but unfortunately that one rolled wide.
Here's one for you to assess and Ross to assess. I was speaking to Derek McInnes after the game in the press conference, and another interviewer, not me, suggested to Derek that Hearts may have been a bit lucky.
Oh, he didn't like that.
Derek didn't like that. He railed against that. And he asked the interviewer to clarify his point. And the interviewer said, well, look at the chances, particularly the one Masuenisi missed. And Derek said, that's bad finishing by Motherwell. That's not luck on our behalf.
What do you make of that, Ross?
I think he's just shown a bit of arrogance, really, to be honest.
Me or Derek?
Don't get me wrong, I kind of agree with the journalist in the first place, because that's the way I think, other people don't. What I did want to ask was, the first half that we had, there wasn't much in the first half, but there was four Motherwell players, including the keeper, that went down injured, and they were down for quite some time, and yet, every time they were down and got injured, whether it be their legs or wherever they get hit, they're holding their head as if it's a head injury. And the fact that there was only 3 minutes added on in the first half was an absolute joke, because we didn't even play 45 minutes.
Which ones do you think weren't actually head knocks, Ross, because I was obviously there working, and it might be hard to believe, but you're as neutral as you can be. You're, you know, and obviously Tynecastle was loud, and I was so aware of it. You know, every time a Motherwell player went down, the atmosphere, you could sense it, and it was getting more and more vociferous. But certainly, I don't know if you've seen them back. Like Elijah Just's is definitely a head knock. Longello's is definitely a head knock. The keeper wasn't holding his head. I think maybe Side, was he the one? Is he the guilty one, Ross? But I don't know if you've seen them back. I feel like there were actually a couple of head knocks, and that's me genuinely trying to be fair about it.
But if that's the case, then why is the time not being added on? Because you're not going to tell me that the trainers are only on for
Ross. It's a good point you make, and it was a talk where we sit. I was at the game covering it for Super Scoreboard, and the Hearts fans next to me were debating this at half time quite loudly, and one said he was operating a stopwatch in the first half, and there should have been 7.5 minutes added on for the stoppages. And not content with that, he said, I mean, if it had been Celtic, they'd have got 11 minutes.
But I think it's just hard to know, Andy. I'm not, because Ross hasn't been particularly biased or anything, but when you go to a gate, sometimes you're in an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. And I remember the Elijah Just one. I sit right in amongst the fans on the far side where the Sky's position is. And the fans next to me, when Elijah Just, there was, let's say, real accusations that there was nothing wrong with. When you see that one back, he
runs, was a bad one.
He runs right into somebody's shoulder.
I think it was Braga.
So I don't know where the line is between like sort of feeling hard done by if your Hearts, but also maybe getting caught up a wee bit and
I think that's it. I think it's just getting caught up in the atmosphere and the way the game's panned out. I must admit, I thought going into the game, I thought the pre-match build-up of the game, I thought it was a brilliant atmosphere, but I don't know. I felt a real anxiousness inside Tynecastle, and maybe that was just a case of they knew it was a huge game. They knew they were obviously playing a good side, and I thought that kind of fed into the reaction to the tape of things. Because again, Ross, I don't know if you have seen them back, but Elijah Just in particular is quite a bad head knock. Manny Longello's, there's no doubt whatsoever, he gets a forearm to the head. Not saying it was anything more than just a head knock, but that's exactly what it was. So I think they were legitimate stoppages of play. Now, where like I can,
more,
certainly
should have been more time.
That's what I was going to say. Where I can say you feel a wee bit aggrieved as they added on time. Now, that being said, I feel as if that could be a benefit of Motherwell. So, I mean, it's in that game, I don't know what you thought. I thought either side, I thought the game ebbed and flowed in the first half. I thought the biggest chance the first half was probably Oisin McIntyre's header. But I think Motherwell would have been quite happy with extra added on time in the first half as well.
How confident are you ultimately, Ross, that you're going to win this league? Come on, let's hear it.
I'm going to agree with Andy on the anxious point, because I'll be honest with you, I walked out after 70 minutes because I honestly did think that that Motherwell were going to score. For the chances that they had, I walked out.
Oh, Ross, it get too much for you?
No, I was just too anxious. I was there in 1986, pal, you know, so I was there in the last day of the season when I was 15, you know, so I felt the anxiousness, and I didn't. But don't get me wrong, we won again. And I've said before, and I said last week, if we win the Motherwell game and if we win the Hibs game, they need to be up for the Hibs game, because Hibs will be up for it. If they're not up for it and they don't win, then going into the game against Rangers, coming from behind, could be a problem.
I really like you. This is more in your wheelhouse, Andy, but the tactical battle I thought was great, because if we remind ourselves of the history, Motherwell were 3-0 up at Tynecastle, drew 3 each. It was then 0-0 at Fir Park. And at the weekend, it felt like Hearts, it was so obvious, they wanted to leave Callum Ward on the ball. So everybody else, tell me if I've picked this up right. Everybody else is marked, the goalie's on the ball, and Motherwell's instruction clearly is, fine, just keep it as long as you want. The Hearts fans then all start booing and urging their team, come on, go and take the ball off him. And then Callum Ward would get a wee bit edgy, and he'd kick it out of play, and the Hearts fans would cheer. And it was like a real chess game. How did that open up more in the second half then?
Well, I think Callum Ward stayed on the ball longer, so actually enticed the press, and then someone at some point in time had to press for Hearts. And it was interesting to hear Derek McInnes's post-match interview, because you've seen when he made his changes, he wanted to go back to the original 4-4-2 to try and flip the game back in Hearts' favour and make them more of an attacking threat in the game. But then Hearts just lost all control. We obviously have a lot of bodies in the middle of the pitch, then really start to dominate the game.
I liked that admission from him. He said after the game he changed to 4-4-2, and it was the worst decision of his life, I think he said, because Motherwell really...
But then you see Callum Ward staying on the ball to try and know, space open up for the free player, then find the free player. As soon as Hearts went to 4-4-2, how many times did Callum Ward find that free player? You remember the one that he drops into Elijah Just that leads to the long yellow chance that you spoke about at the top of the show.
See, I'd like to see that back. It felt like Elijah Just had a 50 yard circle round him. Yeah. Where, like, so space he started. What about Ross's? Well, Ross didn't see it. He was away up the road. He was too anxious. But it's all right saying Hearts are nervous or Hearts are anxious in Bottle. But the one, if you're saying it was anxious, they go 1-0 down against a decent team. They come back and win 3-1. However they got there, is that not showing a good bit of whatever it is?
Absolutely. There's and that's one thing you there's no way you can criticise about that Heart side is their character and desire to go to the end. I think we've even seen it over the last 2-3 months. I think they've been in some really tight games. I think before that game at the weekend there, their last four victories at Tynecastle were all 1-0, so they've all been nervy finishes. Mm. They've had to hold on to leads towards the dying embers of the game. And in that case at the weekend, you know, I think, without sounding biased, Ross, I think Roger might agree, I think at 1-1 it only felt as if there was going to be one team that's going to go and win the game, and at that point in time it was Motherwell. So again, enormous credit's got to go to Hearts to not only keep themselves in the game, but to then obviously go and find the second and get the third.
What would it mean to you, Ross, if you were there as a 15-year-old in 1986? You must have carried that disappointment with you for 40 years. What would it mean to you for Hearts to win the league?
What would it mean to, I'd paint the streets of Edinburgh. I'd actually paint the streets of Glasgow, to be honest, because there's plenty.
Could you come and paint my back fence, could you?
It would be such a relief. I mean, winning cups is great, but winning the league is, if you'd have told me I was that we would win the league in August, I had a guy in my local chippy told me that we had a good chance of winning the league, and I never agreed with him. I just said our third and that's it. So if you'd have told me in August that we had a chance of winning the league with 5 games to go, I'd have jumped at it. Anyone would.
And they're off to Spain, Hearts, getting a bit of sun, getting a bit of warm weather.
Rangers
training,
too, yeah.
Trying to get it seen over the line. Thank you to Ross. What about Neil, who is on, he's a Rangers fan. Hi, Neil.
Hi, Gordon, how you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you? What are you thinking tonight?
Oh, just got a point for yourself, Roger, on Alan Halliday. is it just me who's slightly worried? I mean, Rangers have been doing it for a few years now where they only seem to wake up and start playing after they've conceded one or two goals. And, okay, you give plaudits to the, you know, recovery and scoring five in the second half. But in this run-in, when every point is going to be fought tooth and nail between, you know, Hearts, Motherwell, Hibs and Celtic, if Hearts go 1-0 up against Rangers, 2-0 up, are they not just going to shut up, and Rangers won't have a chance at these kind of recoveries? Because it's happened this season where they've gone 1-0 down at Parkhead and the Old Firm, 2-0 down at Livy, and they come back and they make these recoveries, but that can only last so long, and eventually a team's just going to say, well, let's not give them that chance.
Do you think you're maybe close enough, though, Neil, that you could keep doing it for just, it's only a few more games? Hearts did take the lead a couple of times at Ibrox, of course, recently.
Yeah, but I think it's this running, it being so tight, I think that if, you know, teams are seeing, right, well, they come alive a bit more, we need to then, I think the opposition might just know, right, if we get one or two goals, we'll shut up shop and we'll just low block and just let nothing through. And yeah, they might still batter the doors down, but that's not to say you can score 5 goals every time in every second half.
No, I agree with you, Neil. I think that level of performance in the first half, if continued, is not going to win Rangers the league. And again, if Rangers go 2-0 up against Motherwell, who have only conceded 29 goals this season, I don't see them coming back. Out with Motherwell this season, I don't think Hearts have conceded 3 goals in a game. So if you go 2-0 game in that game, you're not coming back. So no, I agree. But that being said, I do feel that Rangers are arguably in their best moment of the season at this moment in time. Yes, they had that disappointing couple of weeks against Celtic, but I think performance-wise in that game, I think there was a lot of positives to take. But I think over the last couple of months, 2-3 months, and potentially even longer, I do think Rangers have the best form out of the three, which is why you can make a real case for them that they can go and win this league. That being said, I do feel that you have to go to Tynecastle and Celtic and win at least one of them. I think you have to get potentially 4 points, maybe even 3's enough over the course of it, but I think you have to go and win one of the games. That being said, they've got a couple of difficult ones before that as well.
Has Bojan Miovski started to show that he maybe could be the striker, Neil, that comes and fires you over the line, because there's been a lot of doubts?
Well, I think if Miovski and Chermiti can channel a bit of post-split Kyle Lafferty, then, you know, we'll be laughing, because now is the time for them to find form. It looks like they're doing it. So I like Miovski. I don't think he's had the best time not getting a run of games, and if it was Danny Rowe, didn't fancy him to begin with because he was a Martin signing. But you know, he's a goal scorer. I think Chermiti offers a bit more physicality, a bit more linking, you know, dropping a bit deeper, kind of number eight role. But I need both of them need to be firing in all cylinders for the next five games, and we need to get the first two goals and stop leaking, you know, in the first 20 minutes.
Listen, it's going to be a fascinating run. As we've said since 6 o'clock on the phone, none of the three teams are perfect. And it was summed up beautifully. There was moments for each of the teams at the weekend when you weren't convinced they were going to get maximum points at all. You know, Rangers were losing 2-0, Hearts were losing 1-0, Celtic sort of huffed and puffed at 1-0 up, couldn't get the second goal, couldn't put St Mirren away. So you just don't know what's going to happen next. The next fixture is Celtic at home to Falkirk. If Celtic win the game, I think it's a 5:30 kickoff on the Saturday night, it puts the pressure onto Rangers. 3 o'clock at home to these boys, Motherwell team on the Sunday, and then an Edinburgh derby at Easter Road at 4:30 on the Sunday. It's going to be fabulous. And the beauty is, as we've seen at the weekend, Motherwell and Falkirk are dangerous. Hibs have already beaten Hearts at Easter Road this season. None of the three can take anything for granted.
Quickly, if you can, Andy, talk us through that attack then, because is it two strikers? Is it one? If Nadiri's season over, can Miovski do it? Mikey Moore's arguably been the best attacker, but Rangers were fine without him yesterday. Mm-hmm. What's the thought there?
Well, I must admit, I've not been Bojan Miovski's biggest fan throughout the course of the season, but I don't think there's any doubt that Rangers look better with two strikers. I think even the numbers just show you that over the recent month or two since they've went to two strikers up top. Said it at the top of the show, 14 goals in the last three games. So I thought they looked a lot more dangerous with the two strikers in the second half. So for me, I think, given that is Rangers' preferred shape and where I do think they look best, I do think Bojan Miovski has to be that starter. That being said, I think there's still been question marks over the wide positions. I think Mikey Moore has been that real shining light, as she says, and I think Gassama has probably took his chance at the weekend as well.
Thank you, Neil. It was a pleasure. Hopefully we'll speak again. Let me tell you about this first.
The world's biggest music quiz for Cash for Kids Day.
Couple of weeks away this, so make sure you've got it organised and in the diary. The world's biggest music quiz, hosted by Anton Deck no less, Thursday 30th of April 1pm. But our own quiz night, we're launching that the night before, where you can actually come along in person and take part for Cash for Kids. We're calling it Glasgow's Big Bad Music Quiz. It's taking place at BAD, funnily enough, Barra's Art and Design Centre, Wednesday the 29th of April from 6:30. And I know the way Glasgow works, some of you would rather see George and Cassie than Ant and Dec, so they're going to be in hosting duties. Some brilliant prizes, your tickets of course. The money goes to help disadvantaged children right here in our communities. So get your team together. Spaces are limited. Go to Clyde1.com and we'll see you Wednesday, the 29th of April, for Glasgow's Big Bad Music Quiz, all for Cash for Kids.
You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
We're into the final part. We don't have long left. If you're quick, if there's something pressing, burning, you just have to get off your chest, call us now. How's about this teaser? Through Adam and Bridge of Weir sent it in. Who are the nine players since 2018 who've played in the Scottish Premiership at 39 or older? You've got Craig Gordon, Alan McGregor and Gareth McCauley.
Is Kenny Miller one?
Yes.
Kasper Schmeichel?
No. Sorry. Yes.
David Marshall?
Yep. You've got three to get.
What about Jermaine Defoe?
Doesn't really help that Andy played with half this list, does it? Jermaine Defoe is another one. Okay, two to get, and they are the hardest two, funnily enough. I like it when it works out that way, right?
We're just definitely know him.
Who are you pointing at?
Joe Hart. That's not him.
No. He didn't actually retire that late for a goalie. We really are fast running out of time. I must have had bad break discipline this evening. What's the biggest issue from the league over the weekend that we've not mentioned yet? You can decide to take it away.
8 minutes for a VAR check at Kilmarnock on Saturday night.
I thought it was six. Was it eight? My
eight.
Goodness.
Doesn't matter what the decision is. If it takes 8 minutes to resolve, there's something in the system not working correctly.
I actually thought you were going to say like Aberdeen's result or something. That threw me, I must admit.
No.
Andy?
I agree. I actually don't particularly like the awarding of the penalty. I don't think it is a penalty. I don't think Scott Wright's getting on the end of it. I think it's 10 yards over his head. I think it's really minimal contact for Jamie Brandon. So I don't think initially it's a penalty, but obviously to follow up on that is far too long.
Do you think the delay contributes to it being missed, or is that just one of those things
I don't buy that personally.
No,
I personally don't. Maybe it's different for different individual people. Personnels, but I wouldn't exactly say rugby parts are cauldron that you have to wait in for 8 minutes.
No, but you're going for two killie pies waiting to take it.
So nothing really changed there. You know, we said there was minimal movement. The only movement, and that's why I was trying to tee up, but you both decided not to. Aberdeen went above Dundee. That was the only movement in the table. Is that you both at the start of the show suggested you still think they could get dragged in? I was surprised to hear that.
Well, they're what, 5 points clear of Kilmarnock, is that correct?
Yes.
And the next game's against Kilmarnock.
Yeah, but we've been doing this at the top. It's not just the points, it's the number of teams in between them. You've got to add that in.
Yeah, but they would be pulled to within 2 points of Kilmarnock if they lost the game.
And you would fancy St Mirren to beat Livingston.
And then Dundee are still in between as well.
And they've got a derby, first game after the split. The good thing, listen, they all play each other, they'll sort themselves out, and the one that finishes 11th, by the looks of things, might get a wee shot at Mark Wilson and Alec Ray's Partick Thistle.
Do you think... You think Dundee, St Mirren and Kilmarnock can all significantly outperform Aberdeen at the same time post-split? I just feel like that's hard.
But we have seen that before.
Yeah,
we've seen it before. We've seen Hibs miss out in top six in the last game of the season and the last game before the split and then end up getting relegated. So I think if a team's won two games in 17, and I think you can argue the case of Kilmarnock, St Mirren and Dundee, for me, look a lot more likely to get consistent performances and results. I think you had the two of them together. I don't think they're safe yet.
I don't mean to keep kicking your big pal, but every week we ask, oh, is that Livy down now?
Yeah.
And people had to be fair. Some people said months ago the answer to that was yes. Some people give them another week and they say, oh, if they don't win this one, they actually, again, they played quite well in moments.
That'll be the most galling. You could tell week's post-match interview, it was just galling for them the way they've got so close again. They've played so well in flashes again. Lewis Smith, terrific. Again, and yet somehow they contrive to lose the game again.
I think Lewis Smith's just secured his move again in the summer. And I'll get performance for him. He has been that one standout outfielder, I'd say, for Livingston. I think Jerome Prior at stage of the season said a decent season, but Lewis Smith, without shadow of doubt, has been the standout outfielder.
I mean, if anyone's in any doubt of what it looks like, it's 12 points with five games to go. I'd love to give the big guy a chance, but that feels unlikely, shall we say. Hope he won't hold that against me.
Yeah, I think unlikely is a good one, isn't it?
And below that, though, as you mentioned, Mark Wilson, Alex Ray, Tony Watt, friends of this show.
And listen,
I'm not going anywhere, but a good win for St Johnstone as well.
Well, big win for Thistle against Dunfermline, which I thought might have been an awkward game. St Johnstone don't play at the weekend. They should have had Dunfermline, who are otherwise engaged at Hampden. So if Thistle win at Airdrie, it goes to 2 points. And then that asks a question of St Johnstone, who then play twice before Thistle play again. So can they handle the pressure?
It's heating up down the leagues. We had a top of the table clash between Stenhouse Muir and Inverness Kelly Thistle in League One. East Kilbride and Spartans both losing in League Two.
I know. Can't wait. I've got a wee investment with Stenhouse Muir, young boy at Motherwell's on loan there. He's doing extremely well. So I'm always watching his progress. I thought they got a fortuitous penalty against Inverness, it must be said.
No VAR in League One,
but certainly a fortuitous penalty, that's for sure, that Inverness will feel aggrieved by.
An air one. The injury crisis was so bad, John Rankin did his hamstring last week, and they still managed to get a win.
We'll need to get Hugh Keevans down for that meet and greet eventually. Right, can you name the nine players since 2018 who've played in the Scottish Premiership aged 39 or older? There's a bit of a goalkeeping theme. Craig Gordon, Alan McGregor, Casper Schmeichel, David Marshall. Not solely goalkeepers though. Gareth McCauley, Jermaine Defoe are the others.
Martin Kenny Miller.
You need to go back to goalies now though. I shouldn't have said that.
Oh.
Very difficult. Very, very difficult. One of them is
Craig Sampson.
No. One of them's even beyond you two. There you go. And I'm confident in that.
Brian Potter.
Nope.
Oh, we might need clubs.
Yeah.
The clue is one of them has now been added to Celtic's goalkeeping staff.
Colin Meldrum.
Nope. He's been there for a while. Recently added
Michael McGovern.
Okay.
Oh, I played
at Hearts.
Aye.
And the last one, I think he was the oldest player to make their Premiership debut. I'm sure. This was his debut, age 39.
I think Gary Maley at Livy.
Gary Maley at Livy.
Oh, that's right.
Remember it. Well done. Thank you to Roger, Hannah and Andy Halliday, and to you for all your calls and your company. We're back at 6 o'clock tomorrow.